This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, and in the last 10 years, the lines between enterprise tech and consumer tech has virtually disappeared. What used to be a clear separation of work or enterprise devices and consumer gadgets is now combined into one, because efficiency has become, I guess, the biggest priority in many facets of life. How did this happen, and what devices throughout the years has helped us change our mindset? What is the future of mobile and smartphones, and have we actually reached the peak in innovation? A million questions on my mind and only one show to do it all. Welcome to our Decade in Review special, and this is episode one. With me today for the first time ever to help me understand what I just said is Amin Ashari. Amin, welcome to the show.
Hello Jeff, thank you for having me.
And Alexander Wong.
Hi Jeff, thanks for having us.
And Rory Lee.
Hi Jeff, excited to be here.
And you guys are from Soya Chin Chow, and we are of course going to be looking back at 2010 and some of the changes that has happened in the consumer tech space. But I guess we have to start with Soya Chin Chow itself. If we were to look back in 2010, if you were to go on to, you know, an online search result and Google Soya Chin Chow, I think the number one item that would come up would probably be one of Malaysia's favorite drink. But right now in today, if we were to do a search of Soya Chin Chow, your website would be up. So, you know, take us back to 2010. How was Soya Chin Chow different in 2010?
All right. Thank you very much. That's a very nice introduction. And you're right. Back then in 2010, when you search for Soya Chin Chow, you get the drink. Now in 2019 and 2020, you'll get the website. It started out as a blog with Alex and myself. We were, you know, kind of working in telco back then. And we saw that a lot of people that were covering the telco beat and the consumer devices beat were not like really covering that those stories in depth. And we figured out, hey, you know, we have some information that we can share that might help people in making their decisions on subscribing to mobile plans and buying telephones. Why not help them out? So the idea was just to provide information that could help people in making their decisions. I think our analysis, you know, Alex did a lot of that. Grew to become something that people appreciate and they like. They kind of like our raw style of reporting stories as it is, and telling the truth and always adhering to integrity and stuff like that. And here we are. I think we've been a website started as a blog in 2007, and now many years down the line, we're here as a business. So yeah. I guess it's a good opportunity to talk about like how a consumer tech-driven thing has now become something of a mesh between enterprise and consumer.
And you've also become like a business itself. For those of you who are listening on radio, you got to also go onto their website because there is a video. We're actually doing a video shoot in the studio as well. And, you know, we've got the two camera guys here and, you know, and your setup is, I guess, you know, really impressive. I've seen some of your videos on Let's Talk About and some of the tech videos that you do, explainer videos, I guess, right? But for Alex, in your side, so Amin talked about like he was in the telco space. On your side, because you both kind of started at the same time. You were there since day one, right?
Yeah. I think when we started, we primarily focused on telco plans and so phone bundlings, because 10 years ago, that was when Malaysia starts to get the latest iPhones. We got the iPhone 3GS and iPhone 4, and there's a lot of confusion out there, like, should I get it outright or should I get it with a plan?
So I remember that. Yeah.
So that's where we give an in-depth analysis on the plans that you should get.
Right, so that was, I guess, 2010. It's funny because it's only 10 years ago when Malaysia really saw the impact of what, you know, the devices like the iPhone had. And now it's just become like a norm. You know, we see these kind of new devices year after year. But the impact that it had 2010 was so big that, you know, we weren't talking about which plans do we choose and, like, do I buy it outright? Which postpaid, prepaid do I go for? And many of the telcos, I remember, were really pushing out and they had this kind of new structure of buying a phone from a telco itself. And a lot of people were confused, like, you know, what is the upfront cost? How much do I actually pay? And there was so much of confusion into the you know, buying a phone. Nowadays, it's just, you know, it's a normal nature to look at, oh, I'll just buy it with my plan. And they've got so many different plans. Rory, what about your side? 2010, what was, like, you know, happening in your life? Because I understand you only joined Soya Chin Chow about 4 to 5 years ago.
Yeah, so I was still studying in 2010. So I didn't really join right at the beginning. But one thing that held true for me when I joined was like, we had this voice, right? We had this philosophy of not just reporting the what, but also asking the why, you know, explaining things in a way that people would understand. And I think that was something that was really missing in terms of like the coverage of the local scene. So that was something that's held true until today. And it's still what we're doing right now. So we're trying to not just tell you what's going on, but, you know, advise you. At the end of the day, what we want you as a reader to take away from our articles is we want you to be able to make a decision at the end of it and not just like, oh, wait, now I have more questions that are left unanswered. And I think that's something that's really cool and something that we will always continue to keep doing.
I think, exactly like you mentioned, the why still exists in today, right? Still, we got to be able to ask the why questions and put it out there for our kind of audience. But I joined BFM in 2010, and I remember in one of like the first few technology interviews that I was doing was the whole bring your own devices trend, the BYOD trend. And now it's just become the norm. You would expect, you know, we hire interns almost on every quarter. And, you know, I just assume that, you know, they have a device that's capable enough to do the day-to-day processes that we have. And I realize most of these devices that they bring in are consumer devices, but it's good enough or even better to run some of the enterprise applications that we have. How much do you think has that been changed or has that changed in the last 10 years in terms of how consumer tech has really leapfrogged in terms of the performances and its usability and the ease of doing things, that now enterprise is kind of like looking at what consumer gadgets are doing to follow suit as well?
Okay, well, that's a very interesting question. So what has happened now is that there is no boundary between what is an enterprise device and what is a consumer device. Back then, 10 years ago, there is. So if you're talking about computers, you need an enterprise computer, like a ThinkPad or something like that. If you need a phone, you need an enterprise phone, like a BlackBerry.
What's that?
So BlackBerry is not an iPhone. It's not a Note. It's an old phone. Yeah. And with all those hardware came enterprise services like BlackBerry Messenger, BlackBerry Internet service, like emails and stuff like that. Those are all enterprise. And if you are a company and you wanted to create an email, you had to buy servers and it cost a lot. But now, like for us as a startup, we don't need that. It's so much easier to set up a service and be professional looking because you have Google Email. You have tools like the iPad. You have enterprise-level devices like the iPhone and the Galaxy Note that are all certified by governments to be able to use in government agencies. I guess right now there is no classification on what is consumer and what is enterprise. And the landscape has changed so much that people want to be able to use their own devices because they want that flexibility. In terms of gig economy, I want to be able to also freelance at the side, and I don't want to be able to do that on a clunky office-issued computer. I would want to do that on my iPad or on my computer that I feel comfortable with. And being able to do that requires a lot of developments. So a lot of things, I think maybe later Rory and Alex can elaborate on this, has culminated to allow us to have this flexibility right now. Mm. So one of them is cloud services. So back then, when I talk about cloud services, when people say, what is that? How do I set that up? How much do I have to pay for that? And you're looking at $100,000 ringgit worth of investment back then, 10 years ago. But now I can subscribe to a cloud service for less than 10 ringgit a month. And I can use that for my office, and I can use that for my albums for kids. So it has blurred and it has become a mesh, and it has become easier for people to run an enterprise-grade business with consumer technology. I think the question now is like, how are we going into the future? What is going to happen? What I see happening now is there's like a blend between what your work is and what your life is. A lot of people now are doing work in their free time because that's when they get inspiration. And a lot of people are also doing personal things in their work time because 11-11. You know, you want to shop online and you want to shop to get the free shipping and all that stuff. Mm. But I think companies in the future and enterprises in the future need to be open to this And this is not anything new. I think a few years back, Google has allowed you to get free time. So you get like, I think, a day to just do your own thing. But bring it back to the company's belief. So a core, what's core is, you know, the company needs to have like a strong belief. Tie that with technology. Tie that with enablement. Tie that with independence. And you will see a workforce that's inspired that can find ways to do things differently with the tools that they have.
Mm. But I think it's also, you know, looking at there are people who go on their day-to-day lives, but they're actually making money out of it. Like their life has become a business. So I'm talking about like people from, you know, who do YouTube videos for a living. And, you know, whether it's your Casey Neistat who, you know, did a vlog of his day-to-day for, you know, X amount of days. I can't remember what was it, but you know, he then became like an icon and everyone else kind of followed suit. And there are some people, you know, we see with games as well, streaming games as their it's a hobby, but it's now a money-making machine as well. And you know, we see in the recent government's budget, you know, $20 million allocated on esports as well, and we know it is a big deal. And I guess the workforce is changing, and you know, what may perceive to be just a fun and play thing may actually be a business, just like Soya Chinchao. It's a fun and play hobby, let's do a blog. Now it's an entire business by itself. And we see, I guess, Alex, I want to ask you, why do you think this has happened? Going back to Rory, like, you know, being able to ask the why question, I'm going to do this. Why do you think this has happened?
I think one of the biggest contributing factors is the evolution of connectivity. Because I think when 3G was introduced in Malaysia more than 10 years ago, you can actually do more things on the go. Back then, if you're doing work, right, you need to be bound to a desk because you only can get high-speed connectivity in the office or at work. But with 3G, you can actually get things done outside. You can stream videos for the first time without any buffering. And with 4G, you can do much more. You can view videos, live videos on the go without any buffering. You can actually access cloud services as if you're in an office. So there's no need for you to rely at home. And in fact, even now, sometimes you look at 4G, it could be better than your home broadband.
Yeah. And then God knows what's going to happen with 5G, right? What kind of changes that it'll bring. Rory, on your side, I want to ask you, like, you know, what do you think was the catalyst in terms of it really made that switch where enterprise and consumer tech really blurred the lines and people started to think differently? What was the catalyst for you?
So I don't think that there was just one big event that sort of changed. I think it was all these little things sort of adding up. So previously, there was like a big distinction, right? Like Amin mentioned earlier about the ThinkPad. Like that is the business laptop when you think about business laptops. And then since then, you know, with the development of like mobile technology, how good for our wireless networks are getting, right? So that has gradually sort of like, it's almost like a domino effect, right? And then right now, if you look at ThinkPads of today, right, they're built not only to appeal to business customers, but they're also trying to appeal to the consumer or like non-enterprise customers. So you have like the thin and light ThinkPads that, you know, those were not a priority back then, the sacrifice on ports. So I think it's all like, small sort of cascading effect that because of this, it influenced this. And now even people who have been making sort of enterprise-grade stuff specifically for enterprise are trying to appeal to the consumers as well. And like you said, you know, with the evolution of how people can monetize, how game streaming, live vlogging and stuff like that, the sort of landscape of what is pro-grade, what is enterprise-grade is really blurred. And you're seeing consumer products with the pro branding on it because they want to appeal to that aspect of the sort of market, which was previously, you know, unthinkable. And that's a lot of it, I believe, has to do with the development of our mobile networks.
All right. After the break, I will ask about the changes in the consumer behavior because you talked about, you know, Rory, you talked about new devices coming out, appealing to different audiences. And I guess the consumer behavior has also changed throughout the years. This is our Decade in Review special episode one. Stay tuned. I'm here with Amin Ashari, Alexander Wong and Rory Lee of Soya Chinchao. My name is Jeff Sandu. We'll be right back. BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to our Decade in Review special, and this is episode one, part two. I'm here with Amin Ashari, Alexander Wong, and Rory Lee from Soya Chinchao. And earlier on, before the break, we talked about, you know, how you guys actually came about to an entire business itself. 2010, really much just a hobby, but then now it's an entire business itself. And for those who are listening on radio, I suggest you to also go on to Soya Chinchao's website because there will be a video version of this interview as well. well, so you can go and check that out. And, you know, I guess just before the break, Rory, you know, we're talking about there are new devices that that have, you know, appeared in the market that was previously really targeted to the enterprise sector. But now it has, you know, they've got new kind of, I guess, consumers that they're trying to attract, whether they're enterprise brands, but they're creating devices that are catered to a variety of different users. How much do you think the consumer behavior has actually changed throughout the years with the rise of this, you know, so many new devices in town? We've got, you know, things like the iPads that, you know, are really taking, again, changing the workforce. How much do you think has our behavior change that now there's new devices catered to you as an individual instead of you into a group?
I think it's the biggest thing is that people are getting more picky. That's one thing that I noticed that previously it's like if you wanted something for your business, you just go out and buy the most businessy thing, which is like, I don't know, ThinkPad or something like that. Now you have so much more freedom and people are getting more critical and they are, you know, with the internet, your people have the opportunity to sort of voice their opinions and share like what they think works, what doesn't work. And that has sort of like, you know, just added onto itself and it has created, I would say, a more educated society in terms of like what kind of devices that they want, what kind of stuff that you need to look at. And I think that's a really good thing, actually.
I just want to add to that, like personalization is a big thing as well. So a lot of people, I mean, back then, okay, so 10 years ago, you come into a company, you expect the company to provide you a laptop. You expect them to provide a reasonable laptop, but it's probably like the, I don't know.
It's handover by, you know, multiple different employees that have been using it, right? So it's only a few years old.
It's a new laptop, okay? They will give you a new laptop. Because for me, it's like if I go to work 10 years ago and they give me like a hand-me-down, like, sorry, dude, you got to, you know, invest in the tools that I need.
You see, that's why you started your own business.
Yeah, but the thing
it's
is...
It's different in the corporate space.
Yeah.
But, you know, they need to change because what happens is that when you get a standard issue laptop is... It's decided by somebody. It's decided by maybe the CTO. Most of the time, I'm sorry to say this, CTOs are dinosaurs. They work in technology, but they don't move as fast. I can understand. They want security. Control is important. Everything they need to be able to control. But there are tools nowadays that allow you to manage that easily. Just to add to what Rory says is personalization is key because I want to bring a device, whether it's a laptop or a phone, that represents me. I don't want to get a brand that's not me. I want my brand. So if my brand is Apple or if my brand is Huawei or Dell or whatever, I want that for myself because it's a representation of me. And I think in the workspace today, that's a huge deal. You know, like I want to bring, if I like a Note, a Samsung Galaxy Note, I want a Note for my work device. I don't want whatever that you want to give. Even if I like a Note and you want to give me an iPhone, even if it's the latest one, I'll say, no, thank you. I'd like to keep my Note. I think that's very critical. And that is possible today because, again, a lot of the consumer devices, Samsung and Apple in particular, are enterprise-grade by default. Their hardware and their security levels are enterprise grade. Again, they are government approved by the US government, approved by the European Union to be able to be allowed to use in government agencies. So, what you know, if government agencies like the US government allows you to use a Galaxy Note in their environment, what is it for small enterprises or even big enterprises in Malaysia? It's no big deal. Yeah. And it's a point of attraction. So if you come in, if I'm a young employee, maybe Rory can represent this, right? So if I'm a young employee, and
it's okay, Alex, I'm on the same boat as you. we're feeling the burn here,
and we're starting our work journey, right? And if there's a company that says, okay, dude, you can come in here, you get an allowance of 3,000 ringgit for whatever computer or laptop or whatever that you want. We'll foot that bill, and it belongs to you. So when you leave after X amount of years, right, it's yours. That's a huge boost because I can buy like a device that's me, you know?
Yeah.
What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I think it's a big major shift because I remember back in the days, right, you get a chunky old laptop and then remember when you need to deal with a lot of emails, you need to archive it in a file on the computer. If you lose that, it's gone and you need to constantly clear the space. But now, everything's on the cloud. So if you need more space, your system administrator can just automatically scale it up. You don't need to worry about space for the emails.
What era are you guys from? Because all this is like alien to me. I'm still like complaining about, oh, yo, my laptop not heavy, nah, too light, too heavy lah. I need a bit lighter lah. You know, my back hurts. So it's like a very different sort of era, right? Because for me, I didn't have like this whole pass me down sort of kind of thing. It was always like BYOD is like normal to me. And so when I was talking to Alex about his experiences in the past, he used to talk about how they would like hand down like really lousy laptops and stuff like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I cannot imagine working in that kind of environment. I'd just be like, oh.
And also it's hierarchical.
Yeah, so exactly.
In companies, I think even 5 years ago, right, or as recently as 3 years ago, the big wigs get the most powerful laptops, but they don't do the most things. They just make the decisions, right? But it's the people that's on the ground that needs to edit, that needs to take pictures, needs to manipulate large files, and they get the worst laptops, the heaviest, the lowest battery life. It's weird. So all this structure, right? So we're talking about liberalization, right? All this is just maintaining the status quo. So if a company that really wants to innovate, right, it starts with the core. So the core is liberalization. And then people say, oh, you know, if I give too much power to my workforce, right, how do I control them? Here's the thing. When you have talented people, when you have inspired people, you don't need to control them. You just need to make them believe in a cause. And they will all go in the same direction. They might take different paths, but they will all go in the same direction. Then you ask me, what does all this have to do with enterprise and consumer tech? Well, it starts from the device. Because we are so personalized and so, you know, the phone that I carry means something to me. To be able to tell an employee, look, you have the power to choose your device, is a strong message to say to the employee to say, look, if you can choose your own device, that means you're independent, you can make your own decisions in the company. As long as you go in the same direction and believe in the same beliefs, we are all going to go to the same place together.
Yeah. It's a message from the organizations that we believe in you, and that's the reason why we hired you. So here you go. These are the right tools that you can pick in to move forward, right? And that's become the norm. And, you know, in Rory's case, right, for him, it's alien when we talk about, you know, hand-me-down devices. But let's move on to the app society or the app economy itself, because, again, 2010, it was very new in the space. People were still, I guess, trying to find ways to build apps, develop apps, and, you know, it was such a long process. It costs, you know, hundreds and thousands of, you know, ringgit. Now, you know, you could build an app within, I guess, you know, while doing this show, someone could have actually built an app and actually put it up on the App Store and probably make money from this. And we've seen the success and, like, you know, viral success of just, you know, silly games like, you know, one of the Flappy Birds and Snappy Birds and stuff,
Flappy
right?
Bird.
Yeah, Flappy or Snappy. You know, there were so many iterations of it as well. So, but we've seen how, you know, things like this was, you know, it 2010, no one would have imagined that something like this would exist and would, you know, be such a big deal. But it has changed the way we work. And let's start, I guess, with messaging, because communication is key, whether it is on your personal, social life or in the workforce itself. We've seen the rise of things like Slack, and then we've, you know, now seen, I guess, WhatsApp has been embedded into not just our personal life, but in our workforces as well. How much do you think the app society, app economy, I don't know what's the right word to use, but just everything about apps has changed the way we interact with our devices, the way we communicate. Alex?
I think one thing is that with apps, right, you can free yourself from the traditional laptops and desktop machines, so you can work anywhere. So regardless what device you have, like since we have the BYOD, so regardless what device you have, you can just install an app and start working right away. And you don't need to worry about configurations and all that. You just need to install, sign in, and you can start working. And that opens up a lot of new opportunities. And another thing that I want to highlight is that it's not just about the apps themselves, but the cost of running the apps. Because previously, like applications like Adobe software, you need to buy upfront. And you must buy a yearly fee. But now you have subscription models, which makes it easier to access these enterprise-grade apps. So creators can get started with minimal costs compared to 10 years ago.
Yeah, and a lot of them are like cross-platform compatible. You can see Adobe bringing their apps to the even the iPad, which was like, what? It's a tablet, right? Yeah. So that way you can get the full app experience wherever, whatever
app
device
experience
you want
there,
to use.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. You see, this is why we brought you onto the show, because we feel like if it's just, you know, me, Alex, and Amin, it's going to sound, you know, I guess ancient and dinosaur level. But
it's
here
my
you
charm.
Go.
It's my charm.
App experience. App experience.
I believe in this. So the app, okay, we talked about like how CTOs can be like very rigid and all that, right? So what happens is that I think app creators, they start with a problem statement. It's like, what problem can I solve with my app? And when it comes to communication apps, back then, after the demise of BlackBerry Messenger, people still felt the need to communicate rapid fire style, faster than email, not as formal as email, and getting the response as quickly as possible. And that gave rise to WhatsApp. And what happened is that even if your CTO tells you, okay, you're not allowed to use WhatsApp, or you're only allowed to use emails, or whatever proprietary messaging app that's available in your company, people find a way. They find a way to just make work. They just want to work, right? So if I don't work, if you're not telling me to not use the tool that I can, I'm just going to use it. Now every company, I bet you, like every company out there in Malaysia has a WhatsApp group. Every time there's a project, they have a WhatsApp group. They also forsake the security risks of having really private conversation happening on WhatsApp. But that also has blurred the line. So WhatsApp started as a fun messaging app that I can share things with, to now becoming an encrypted enterprise-grade level messaging app that also now has a business solution for small businesses. So it has blurred the lines. And to add to what Rory said and what Alex said, people are now more aware. They are now more capable. They are now more hungry. They want to do more things. And if a company doesn't keep up with that, they'll just find their own way. And if they don't follow suit, it will just open up a hole for security breaches to come in.
I was hoping that I was not going to bring this up into the show, but I guess I have to now, since that you've mentioned how, you know, a lot of people were using WhatsApp for purposes that were, you know, probably sensitive to the information of the company itself, and WhatsApp then embedded encrypted messaging within their solutions, because it was created for something completely different. And on that same lines, I guess we have to look at their parent company, Facebook, which is, you know, capital Facebook, right? And one of their solutions is the lower caps Facebook.
Previously it was Facebook. Now it's Facebook.
Yeah. So with Facebook, the social media platform itself was created to just be a fun and playthings. But now, you know, it is the world's biggest scandal when it comes to data privacy and, you know, how they abuse our data and what they do with our data. Yeah. It's become a political tool, and it's become also, I guess, in the business sense, it's become a business tool. Because if you want to go online, one of the things that people ask you is like, do you have a Facebook page? And do you interact with your Facebook users? Do you use Facebook ratings? Do you do marketing on social media on Facebook, right? Yeah. That's become such a big deal when we, you know, look at how businesses have changed, and they've started for one thing, pivoted to a completely different thing because we found ways to use it to our own benefit, I guess. Right. Let's talk about the future of, I guess, mobile. Before we, I guess, later on we'll talk about VR and AR and all these things. But have we peaked in terms of innovation with mobile devices?
Not at all.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. We're nowhere close. I mean, I have a Galaxy Fold, so it's a folding screen. Okay, I just wanted to say I have one.
Literally a flex.
Yeah. There we go. The end of show. Thank you for watching, guys.
Why I brought that up is because, okay, we've only started to like really understand what can happen. Back then, everything, I think clunky and slow is like a really fitting way to describe how things were 10 years ago. Now we talk about all these buzzwords like artificial intelligence and machine learning. Those things require like huge, massive computers back then. People don't even understand, but now we have that in our consumer grade, normal day-to-day devices. And why I'm saying that is that this thing, this artificial intelligence and machine learning, is now opening a path for us to do and achieve and create more things faster. And we're allowing more possibilities into the future. When I first read about the Galaxy Fold, and when we got wind that it was going to be announced early this year, in Barcelona, was it?
Before, it was San Francisco.
In San Francisco, yep. During the launch of the Galaxy S10, we were all skeptics. We didn't believe. We said, oh, no, that technology was going to be at least 3 years down the line. And during the launch, DJ Ko, the CEO of Samsung, went out without an intro and said, I have the Fold in my hand and this is amazing. And we were blown out of the water. That was like an amazing opener for the year. Obviously, things have slowed down. We saw the Fold, we saw the Mate X and a few other iterations of folding devices, but only the Fold is now available for consumers. Obviously, things have slowed down, but...
Yeah, it's the hype curve anyways, right?
It is, yeah. But it showed you what's possible. And I'm not limiting it to just the Fold, but what it has enabled you to have. So you can have a folding device now, but that also opened the doors for a lot of other things in terms of what technology can do for you. So we're nowhere near where the limit of technology is. It's going to be exciting times and scary times. I think, Rory, you mentioned technology can be scary also, right? Yeah,
but to add on to your point, I think that the smartphone, the Fold was so important. All these folding phones were so important because they came at a time where a lot of us, I think, thought that, okay, this is like the peak of smartphone. This is what the smartphone will look, you know, it can't develop anymore. We're looking for the next thing. And then in comes the folding smartphone and it's just like, oh, wait, there's this whole other aspect that we haven't even considered, you know, the possibility of. It was only sci-fi until it wasn't. And I think that was really cool. So right now, the current iteration of it, I'm still a bit skeptical because the app support isn't quite there. The software isn't quite there. But the concept has just so much potential. So whether we have reached the peak of sort of smartphone development, I don't think so. But in terms of mobile development and how things are going to be on the go, I don't even think we've like scratched the surface. So whether that future would be centered around the smartphone or not, or like a folding device or something else, we don't know, but we know that, you know, there's still so much more to see.
We won't have the answers anyways because, you know, we can't even predict in 2010. Oh, if you ask us, do we think you will have a foldable smartphone, we'll laugh.
I have a say in that, right? So we are at the peak of where we can be right now, but this is only the beginning. Cloud services, which were like very cumbersome, like I was resistant to using cloud until a couple, 3 or 4 years back. It has now become seamless. I have my phone, my iPad, and my computer. All of them have the same files, and it's currently just update. It will update when I change them.
Right.
It sounds I don't know. It sounds normal now, but it's amazing, and it's so easy to set up.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have Siri. And we have Google Now. Those are artificial intelligent tools that can help set up appointments, that can tell you what you need now, that can tell you where you want to go. And if you utilize that, those really can help you become more efficient.
I want to talk about artificial intelligence, but we got to take a short break.
Okay.
And then when we come back, we will dive into AI itself, because I want to ask, like, do you think the name, the brand smartphone will actually just change to a personal artificial intelligence assistant, right? Because that's, I guess, for me, is the future. We'll be right back. My name is Jasandu, together with Amin Ashari, Alexander Wong, and Rory Lee from Soya Chinchow, BFM 89.9.
Begin fun moments. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
And we're back, and this is our Decade in Review special, part 3 of episode 1. Amin Ashari, Alexander Wong, and Rory Lee of Soya Chinchow. Now, before the break, we talked a little bit about artificial intelligence and how it's now, I guess, we're seeing it on, you know, using it on a day-to-day basis. We're becoming more used to it. It's seeping into our homes as well with so many new devices that we're using. My colleague Richard, he's got, like, I think 3 Google Home devices that he has at home, and that's just in the space of 4 months, because he just felt like, wow, it's so easy to use, right? What's your take on artificial intelligence? Because there's 2 schools of thoughts. One is the Terminator, Skynet, the end of world. The other one is that, like, you know, it's actually helping me to be more productive. Where do you stand on this? Or is there a third line that, you know, it's kind of like in between? We got to ask the why.
So I think AI and artificial intelligence, machine learning, I think is the more accurate term to describe what we're using right now, is more there are more questions surrounding it than there are answers, because a lot of what happens behind the scenes, right? We only see the surface. We only see the result of the machine learning. So that was my first thought. So I was like, oh my God, Skynet, you know, we'll be back.
Because we've seen Google's Duplex, for example, making calls, sounding like a human,
exactly,
fooling another human, thinking that the AI is a human being.
But that's the thing about demos and what actually happens. It's vastly different. So one of my questions, I actually went to Singapore to ask the people behind AWS, for example, what, you know, is there a future where Skynet will be a thing? And their answer was basically no. I don't know if they were just trying to make me feel better or not.
Did they start with a no?
No. Yeah. And then, but basically their explanation made more sense to me. So the way we use AI or machine learning now is that it is highly specific. So it is used to do one task and do one task really, really well. The difference between that and something like a general AI like Skynet, where, you know, it can do everything, is the way you train. So the way we train our AI module, at least that's how they explain it to me, the way they train their AI modules is that they have a specific task that they tell the machine to repeat and repeat and repeat until it can do it right. So being to train something to do everything right, there's just like, it's just not possible right now.
Yeah.
So in that sense, the Skynet future is something that's still very much science fiction. Mm-hmm.
The AGI, the artificial general intelligence.
Yes, which is the big baddie, right? It's like in every sort of movie that has come out. So if we talk about machine learning AI right now, I think it's definitely more useful. Like, for example, when I go to bed, something as simple as setting an alarm, right? Mm-hmm. I don't need to do that anymore. I'm just like, hey, Google, you know, do this for me. And it's like, okay, settle. And then with the evolution of sort of like macros and commands, you can do entire sequences with just like one command, like let's drive or something like that. So yeah, it's definitely helpful.
But should we not put more pressure on the companies that are developing solutions using artificial intelligence? Because at the end, the core of artificial intelligence is the data that's being fed into. And the data can sometimes be manipulated or be biased, and we still don't know so much about the back end of artificial intelligence that whenever we do, as journalists, we do pose these questions, we get the typical response of like, you know, yeah, it's, you know, two school of thoughts. It's the narrow AI, which we seem to be pretty good at, but then there's the general AI, which, you know, that's a far-fetched dream. But at the core of it is we're just so used to giving our data, and then next thing we know, there's a solution that's out there for us, or there's an Instagram sponsored post that's, you know, promoted right at us. There's a Google ad that's right at us, or a Facebook ad that's right at us. And we don't seem to question why. Do you think like we will have this struggle? Because right now it's very minimal, especially in Southeast Asia, in this region. But we've seen in European Union councils, we've seen in, you know, whether it's the Senate meetings with, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and so on and so forth, is that why question of how they use things. Do you think we still lack in terms of understanding the why part of AI?
Very much so. So I think you brought up a very good point, Jeff. Always what happens is legislation is slow. So for example, self-driving cars, which involves artificial intelligence. The problem is not the technology that's the limiting factor. The problem is legislation. So if a car that's powered by Google or Tesla, right, it drives and it crashes by itself, who do we blame? The owner? The manufacturer?
The programmer?
The programmer? Mm. We don't know. There is no right or wrong answer for that. So I read somewhere, I don't have the facts with me right now, but as far as I can remember, California tried to pass a legislation in terms of defining what artificial intelligence is. And even them, they're quite forward-thinking and all that. They got the definition wrong. And they had to come back to the drawing board and figure out, okay, what is it that defines a self-driving car? Because they wanted to pass the legislation. The point I'm trying to make is that, yes, technology is becoming super powerful right now. It's becoming super enabling and super capable. At the end of the day, we are still the people that are controlling that technology. We are the ones that decide when we turn it on and when we turn it off, when we want to look at our phones and when we don't want to look at our phones. Mm. At the core of this is, as much as we would like for technology to be sufficiently advanced to make our life easier, we should not underestimate what it can do to us as well. For artificial intelligence, law and legislation is important. And being able to come up with the standard to say that, okay, maybe have like the three rules of robotics to say that, okay, artificial intelligence shouldn't do these things is very important. And we're not seeing that because people have not come to an agreement to what it was, what it is. And there's also different factors. For example, a capitalist government like the US would have capitalist motivations on what to decide what artificial intelligence can be and should be, just like, you know, the drug industry and the war industry. In Europe, it's more liberal. So they are now very strong in terms of like putting fines on Facebook and Google regarding breach on privacy and security. In developing countries like Malaysia, we are still lacking behind. But, you know, there are a lot of ways that we can learn and move faster. Mm. Before we even dabble into this secret magic arts of artificial intelligence, we need to first understand what it is.
Mm. Alex, you've been very quiet on the subject of AI. What's your take on artificial intelligence?
I think AI is going to make our lives more easier because it learns from us and it makes manual tasks much easier. But the biggest question right now is about privacy, because our people share information freely. They upload their photos to free cloud services for free, but without knowing what's the consequences of that.
Yeah, they don't even know they're giving out
the
information.
Most companies tell you, oh, yeah, your data's with us, but we promise not to see it. You
know? The biggest lie on the internet, right, is the I agree button.
Yes.
Yeah. Is that you read everything? Have you read this? Yes.
Yeah, and then since we talk about the decade, right, so early this year, there was this 10-year challenge where people freely uploaded, oh, okay, this is how it looked like 10 years ago and this is how it looked like right now. So the problem is these things is in public. And other people don't know that some other parties might misuse it for something else. They can use it to predict how it looked like in different age points.
We covered that on Soy Chin Chow, right? So what was the story again with regards to the 10-year challenge?
So the thing is, nobody knew who started this challenge. So everyone is uploading photos of themselves 10 years ago and now. And there's a concern that this can be misused because this is being shared in the public space. Yeah.
And it was developed, I think it was an app that was developed by a Russian engineer. And that was, I guess, you know, just because of the nationality, they were, you know, curious about, you know, what is this for and so on and so forth. But I guess I'm going back to the biggest lie in internet of, you know, the I agree button. Yes. Who's at fault here? Because, you know, is it us? Is it our own fault that we're just scrolling down to the bottom of the page to click that I agree button as fast as we could? Or is the, you know, the mistake done on the, you know, organization itself? Because some of the languages that's used in the terms and conditions can sound alien to me. So how do we go about, you know, being able to actually understand what I'm agreeing on?
Okay, I think I got an idea to solve that problem.
All right.
We live in an age where cars can drive themselves. Our phones can speak back, tell us jokes and rap and things like that. And
Rory still rap better than AI, though. And
I'll take Siri on, no problem.
And we're asking, who is to blame when I, myself, tap on I agree, right? Mm. Then the question is, these language we don't understand. I'm sure, right, if somebody heard about this, I don't know, I didn't do my research on this terms and condition thing. But if there's like a website that I can just say, okay, I'm subscribing to this service, is the term and condition helpful to me or not helpful to me? Should I just click I agree? And if that website is trustworthy, right, I'll just go to that website and just refer to that website. Mm. If there's an app, right, that will tell me, okay, I mean, you're subscribing to XYZ service, the terms and condition is dangerous for your privacy and stuff like that, do not say I agree. Or click on this checkboxes to allow you to have more control. To a certain degree, a lot of brands are doing this. Not a lot of brands. So Google and Apple are doing this. So in their App Store, I will not download anything that's not available on Google Play Store or Google App Store. So automatically, that's a form of security as well. And then, you know, you check at other websites. So the terms and conditions, they don't specifically tell you, but if legit websites, legit brands say, okay, this is good, this is recommended, you can trust them. The Huawei App Store, on the other hand, is something that, you know, you shouldn't touch. So don't download APK stuff and things like that. So, but to answer your question, it's not, I think, okay, my belief is that we need to stop blaming technology and other people on the things, because we ourselves have that control. If we don't understand the language, we ourselves can go ask somebody, hey, is this okay?
Can yeah, I need do this? A TNCfordummies.com.
No, yeah. I think what needs to happen is that consumers need to be aware about their privacy and they need to pressure brands as well to make it clear to them. It's like, for example, not all our websites give you the option to opt out. Like, for example, if something is changed in the service, they just push you, okay, we have updated our terms condition. Agree or not? Okay, agree. There's no way to, like, okay, I agree halfway or what? They should perhaps give more options, like how you install apps on Google Play Store. They give you the option, okay, you want to give access to mic, microphone. They should give that access, that same options as well to consumers with regards to privacy.
Yeah. I think we tend to forget that we do have the power to actually change and dictate how these brands operate and use the data. You know, you even though they may be multi-billion-dollar companies, but if you decide on your own that, you know, I'm not going to agree to their terms and conditions, you know, you may be surprised that there are many other people who would follow suit, and they will then change their own business policies. We've seen before how businesses had to change because, you know, it came out as a public thing where, you know, more and more users were disgruntled by the services, stopped using the services, or decided to not use, you know, parts of their services or the features, and companies had to evolve and had to change. It's a slow process, but I guess that, you know, it's something that we need to also start. Let's, I guess, wrap it up and talk about what are your expectations now that we've kind of looked back in the last 10 years. We have to also kind of look forward. What are your expectations or your hopes to see in the next coming years? You know, 2020 is just around the corner, 5G, you know, AI, all these kind of things, IoT, right? What are you excited about? And what do you think should be like an advice to consumers who are looking for, like, you know, next gadgets and stuff?
I think for me, the most exciting thing is that we are venturing into quite a lot of unknown. Because like I said earlier this year when the folding phone came out, you know, we thought we knew everything already, right? We thought we could see, yeah, the years could be like this, could be like a new iPhone, whatever. But then it's like, whoa, okay, something new. And that to me is the most exciting thing. So I'm really looking forward to what I don't know what to look forward to.
Yeah. Oh, an optimistic point of view from Rory.
You know me, the optimist.
That's very rare.
All right, Alex?
I think I share the same sentiments as Rory as well, because the past 10 years, right, if you look at all the smartphones, they all have the similar candy bar form factor. Mm. And you compare that to 20 years ago, we have flip phones, rotating phones and all that. And I think that's coming back for the next 10 years. So with the folding phone, I think it opens up more possibility. And as you said, 5G will open more possibilities. So I guess there'll be more tools and application out there that can help businesses to be more efficient. Mm. Yeah. And my hope is that consumers should be more well-informed on what's going on, because with cloud service and with AI, right, there's a lot of security concerns that need to be answered.
Yeah, so please read surgeinsure.com.
And listen to BFM's Tech Talk as well. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Listen to BFM and read surgeinsure at the same time.
Yes.
I mean, that's the perfect.
Best combo.
I mean, multitasking at its best. I mean, what about you?
Okay, so yes, I agree with Rory. We should look forward to a lot of things that we can't even imagine. Mm. And I also agree with Alex that we need to be very particular about the technology that we use right now. I have four kids. So the drive for me is to create a society where you have responsible content creators and responsible content consumers. We need to be discerning in the things that we create, because we can create a lot of things. Like anything can go viral. And that virality can change a country, can change the world. But at the same time, if we don't be critical and analyze, and we only give, we don't think about it, and we give our phones that is a window to a universe that we don't even know everything about to our children that's only 3 or 4 years old, we run the risk of exposing them to things that are very dangerous. Mm. I do look forward to how technology can enable me as a person, enable my family, enable the society, and enable companies and businesses to do more things for the environment and for the world and for everybody else. But if we are not careful, it can so very easily go the other way around.
All right. I guess that kind of wraps up our episode 1 on Decade in Review. My guess, you know, I'm excited about just, you know, like you said, excited about the unknown. But I do believe that I think the word smartphone will probably disappear in the next 10 years, and it will just be my personal assistant is, you know, so-and-so, right?
And I think the smartphone word disappeared already. Well, we all just call it a phone.
A phone, yeah, yeah.
That we don't call on.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
It's not even a phone anymore.
We don't even call.
That was Amin Ashari. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Alexander Wong.
Thanks, Jeff.
And Rory Lee.
Thank you.
From Soya Chin Chow. And of course, if you're listening to this on radio, you can go on and check out Soya Chin Chow's website. There will be a video that's part of their Let's Talk About. So that will be on video. You can check it out. My name is Jeff Sandu, and this has been our Decade in Review special on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.